بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dovod Sima or Sama is often heard. You often hear the word Sama or Sima. What does this refer to? And is it got some place in the Shariat or not? Hazrat Nizamuddin Awliya Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi It is reported of him that he used to listen to Sama. But then he says that this Sama, who is it permissible for? He has placed four conditions for its permissibility. One is, the one that is reciting the Sama, he must be from amongst the Ahlullah. In other words, he must be a committed person to Deen, committed to the Sharia, externally, internally, outwardly, you don't see any flaws in him. His association is right, his concern of Deen is right, his thinking and behavior is right. So this is the first condition, that he must be right himself. Now if the person that is reciting this Naat and all that, he is not right, outwardly he doesn't have a right appearance. For example, his beard is not right, or his dressing is not right, his behavior is not correct, his conduct is wrong, his thinking and khayalat are not right, then it is not right for him to have an audience of Sima. So that's the first condition. The second condition says is that the people that are listening to that Sama, they must also be people that are concerned about Deen. In other words, they must also have commitment to Deen. It mustn't be that they are free type of people, their conduct, their behavior, their ways, their mannerisms and patterns in life is all off. And all that they are doing about Deen is listening to Sama. So they also must be a people, a class of people that are committed to Deen. So if they are people that are free thinking and don't have the type of affinity with the Deen and with the Sharia, then it is not right for them to listen to it. Man is not dressed right, his thinking isn't right, he's not concerned about his namazes, and then he is listening to Sama, and he feels perhaps that listening to that Sama is a substitute for my misdemeanors and my inconsistency, then he's off, obviously. So that's the second condition. And the third condition is the mazmoon, in other words, the thing that he is reciting. One is the reciter, and one is the audience, and number three is the actual thing what he is reciting, the poetry or whatever he is reciting, that must be right as well. The contents of his recitation, the contents of the poetry that he is reciting or his rendering must be right as well. It mustn't be, for example, things that are about wine or whiskey or things about women, etc. It mustn't be illicit and immodest, immoral things. So that's the third condition. And the fourth condition is that it mustn't be accompanied with any type of musical instrument. So if these four conditions are found, then to listen to it will be permissible. Now, there is a difference of opinion. There's two classes of people in the Sharia. One we know as the Fuqaha, and one is the Sufiya. Fuqaha are jurists. They are like Allah Ta'ala's law keepers. They are the law keeper of Allah Ta'ala. That is the fuqaha. They maintain the law. In the word of the Quran, وَالْحَافِزِينَ لِحُدُودِ اللَّهِ. They maintain the law of Allah Ta'ala. Right? So, they will tell you, move. They will tell you, stop. They will tell you, slow down. They will tell you, your speed, you pick up your speed here. So, these are the people that are keeping and maintaining the law of Allah Subhanahu Wa Ta'ala. So, when they maintain the law of Allah Subhanahu Wa Ta'ala, then they'll be very, very cautious in their movement and their maneuvers. They'll have to be very cautious. Sometimes they will have to look at a broader aspect of things. They can't look at a thing in an isolated, they can't look at just an isolated situation. They will have to look overall, what is the condition of the people overall, and then they will have to pass a judgment. Like, for example, some ulama-i-kiram say it is permissible for a person to look at a woman's face. Right? Some, that's the statement of certain ulama-i-kiram. But now the fuqaha will come in and they will say that now it's not permissible for you to look at the face of a woman. And they will tell you the reason for that is that because of the abundance of fitna, therefore, nobody will be counted as exempt from the law. He's not exempt from the law. Alright, there was one zamana where there was a lot of chastity, there was a lot of modesty, there was a lot of self-respect. So in that zamana, there were situations where people will not fall into fitna straight away. They will not fall into evil, they will not fall into any type of corruption. But now there is an abundance of fitna. There is an abundance of immorality, immodesty. So nobody can count himself to be an exception to the law. He can't consider himself, I'm exempt from the law. The law has been passed. And the law, when it's passed, then it is across the board. It will apply to one and all. So now the fuqaha, when they look at a situation, they will look at a situation in a broad term. They won't just look at it at one isolated situation. Maybe one person from all who will not fall into fitna. He will not fall, he will not become a victim of wrong. But that's an isolated situation. So because of that isolated situation, you will not say now that this is permissible because of this. So one was the view of the fuqaha, like I say, those that are in charge of making the law. And one is the opinion of the Sufia. Sufia felt it is permissible. But the ones that are in charge of the law, they are called the fuqaha. Fuqaha say it's not permissible. These people say it's permissible, right? But these people that are in charge of the law, maintaining the system and maintaining the order, they will say it's not permissible. And really, they are a great blessing to the ummah. When you look at the fuqaha, then they are a great blessing. Then they see all situations. They look, they will see what's going on in the east, what's going on in the west, what's going on in the north, what's going on in the south. They look at the overall situation, and when they see the overall situation, then they will pass a judgment. So overall, then these people's decision will be very, very sound, very, very secure, and it will be very well calculated and arranged. So they will say that it's not permissible, right? Now there may be isolated cases. There may be situations. One person had a mental condition that he was going through, a spiritual mental condition that he was going through. And in that spiritual state, he wants to commit suicide, he wants to kill himself. Now you go through that type of situations, sometimes a person goes through a very low end and he feels very much depressed, very low, and sometimes the person feels very high. So these type of conditions you go through. So when you go through that type of conditions, then some of the Sufi-i-Kiram will say, alright, now for your condition it is permissible, that you will listen to some type of sima. Hazrat Shah Abdul Quddus Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh, he used to also listen, and his son was Mulana Ruknuddin Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh. So when his son had just graduated as an alim and had come home to Gangoh, and he saw his father was engaging in sama, he says to his father, "Abba, this is not permissible. The Sharia doesn't allow this. It prohibits this." So now this Sufiya Ikram of that zamana were so cautious and so careful, although his father was also a great alim, but straight away he restrained. And he says, "No, this is the law of Allah Ta'ala, and we need to maintain the law of Allah Ta'ala." Straight away he moved away, kept away, resisted. That correction is coming from the son, but the fact that the child is a graduated person, he is a learned person, he knows the deen perhaps better than his father, so his father is saying it's not permissible, and straight away he holds back. He doesn't tender any type of argument. What you know, you just came out from the madrasa now, you're still wet behind your ears, you're still green. So he didn't use those statements, and straight away he kept back, kept away. After a week or so, some days had passed, once the father asked the son Ruknuddin that just press my back a little bit. So the son went to press the back, and he saw this amount, a handful of skin drying up and peeling out. So the son got a shock, became apprehensive by what happened. The father says, Shah Abdul Quddus Sahib says, that my whole body, because of the heat of zikr that I do, it becomes very, very tense. And when it becomes so tense, then I listen to this type of sima or something, and then that eases that heat in my body. It cools it off and it eases it off. But now, since you have said me, you have warned me that sima is not permissible, so I've left it out. When I've left it out, but this heat is building up. And this heat is building up, and this is what is causing to my body. So then he says to his father, well, then this is tadawi bil muharram. This is a treatment with a thing that is not permissible. Though it is in law, it's not permissible. But now there is no other substitute for this ailment. For this type of illness, there is no other substitute. When there isn't a substitute, then for you to listen to it, it's permissible. It's not a general law. It's specific to that type of a person who's going through that condition. There's no other available treatment. Man has lost blood. And then the doctor says, for him to come up again, we'll have to do some type of blood transfusion. So now for him it will be permissible. But you will not say now that it's across the board, across any person, every person can do blood transfusion. No, you won't say that. Yes, the person who is sick, who is ill, and the doctors say definitely he needs blood. If he doesn't take, then it's a life-threatening situation. Then you will say that for that specific person, it is permissible. But to pass judgment across the board, no, you will not say that it's permissible across the board. For that specific person, it will be permissible, it will be right. See? So, this is what is called sima. Now, you may see in the hadith that there were some situations where people had sung, like we hear, Tala al-Badru alayna min thaniyati al-wada'i, or other small little girls had sung, and they had sung in the presence of Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So why do we say that this type of sima is impermissible? So when you look at those wordings that were sung by those little children, or in whichever recorded incident in the hadith, then that's a situation where girls or little children were singing, and they were singing not in an organized way. They were not singing like professional singers. See, once you get a professional singer, a professional singer, he has a style, he has an art. That singing is an art. He has to be low at times. Sometimes he has to impress upon a certain word. Sometimes he has to stretch a word. Sometimes he has to bring about a certain type of melodious voice. Sometimes he has to have a gloomy voice. And sometimes he has to have a high-spirited voice. So all these are musical notes and musical laws. So the professional singer, he follows those musical laws. He follows those musical laws when he's singing, right? And these people that are singing, they are not professional. Obviously, they are small children. They are singing, but they are unprofessional singers. Like, for example, I just recite one line of poetry, but I recite it in a little bit of a melodious voice. So you will not say that I'm a singer. But if I follow a certain art in poetry, a certain line in singing, and I sing according to that musical tone, now it will be said that he is a professional singer. Let's see how he's singing. He knows where to pick the voice, where to lower the voice, where to stress the voice, where to make the voice a little bit gloomy, where to make it a little bit high, where to spirit the person up, and where to break the spirit. So he knows about all these things here. So he's a professional singer. So that professional singer is different, and non-professional is different. So these girls that were singing, it was non-professional. They just came at an occasion and they had sung something. Small little girls, 4 or 5 years of age. So you will not say that they were professional singers. So therefore, it was not condemned. Their practice wasn't condemned. But now the singers that you have, they are professional singers. Like I say, we had one student up till last year from Thailand. So he had a rhythm of singing, right? When he used to sing that Hasbi Rabbi. Hasbi Rabbi. So it's like a beat. You know, it's a beat, it's moving with a beat, and you're coming with that. Now that's a professional style. And someone says, Hasbi Rabbi Jalla. He's got no beat, he's got no style. He's just singing in a sweet voice. And that person is singing in a professional style. So that professional style, that is called Sema. And this non-professional style, that was the type of singing that was found in the Hadith. So if someone sings like that, then we will endure that, we will tolerate that, we will not oppose that. But this professional style, that we will not allow. That now we will call Sema. And we will not allow this. Okay. Now, why won't we allow this? One is because it is not found in the Hadith. Therefore, the Fuqaha Kiram, they have declared this as bid'at. In the words of Muntaha Muhammad, the Fuqaha Kiram have declared this as bid'at. They will not allow it. Right? So because it was not supported, it was not found and established, so they will declare this as bid'at. Okay? So that is when it is done in a professional style. But if it is done in an unprofessional style, someone just singing in a melodious voice, someone singing in a sweet voice, we will not call that as bid'at. Because it's not a professional style. But if it is in a professional style, then we will not allow this. There is a popular hadith that comes repeatedly in Bukhari Sharif. Ya anjasha ruwaydaka sawqaka bil qawarir. Ya anjasha ruwaydaka sawqaka bil qawarir. Anjasha radiyallahu anhu was a person that used to drive the camels, right? So Rasulullah had cautioned Anjasha, now when you are driving camels, then you need to drive them, and you need to, when you want to pick up speed, then you will sing to them, right? And that singing is called a special type of singing. That singing is called hadi, right? So a hadi is when you want to drive someone, when you want to motivate, when you want to encourage someone, motivate someone, then that type of singing is encouraged, you see. Like how you see sometimes, you hardly see it nowadays, but in the old days, when you used to see the road workers working on the road, you know, and they're doing some heavy work, strong work, they'll pick up that pickaxe, they will strike, and they all will go in a chorus, and see, they'll say some words in a singing tone, and they'll build up some type of strength, and they will do it. And they will do it very easily. But that singing will bring up their strength. It will pick up their strength, and they will do it with all their might. So that is that hadi. A certain type of a song, in a certain style, in a certain rhythm, and in a certain musical tone, and that will invigorate. It will just pick up the spirit. You will get some vigor, you will get some strength. So this Anjasha was singing like this. And he was singing very beautifully. And those camels were moving at a speed. The animals also, they also get affected with the music. You see, like you see in India, you see the snake charmers. You see that person is playing the flute and the cobra is coming out. And that thing is dancing. And the moment he leaves it, that thing goes flat. So even animals can get affected with musical sounds. But there are certain sounds that they get affected. You hear the Pied Piper. So that is also same music, Pied Piper. They say in English also, who pays the piper calls the tune. Who pays the piper, he calls the tune. Right? So like men can get affected, animals also can get affected with the same thing. So this is professional singing. And this professional singing, this Anjasha, he was singing. And there were a group of women that were being transported. So Rasulullah saw that that thing is moving and the thing, its speed is really picking up. So Rasulullah cautioned Anjasha, Ruwaidaka, just hold on. Stop it now. I will say stop it. Sawqaka bil qawarir. You see, you are driving, and what you are driving is fragile. What you are driving is glass. In other words, it's fragile. So this, when you talk about this being fragile, in other words, the people that are mounted on this animal, they are fragile. So when you say fragile, so what is Rasul is alluding towards? What is he alluding? What is he saying? What message is he conveying? So the ulama-i-kiram explain that there could be two possibilities of this message. One is this, that, see, because of your singing, these animals are going to pick speed. When they're going to pick speed, it's likely that this woman will not be able to manage with that speed. And they will fall off. They will fall off from their carriages. They may get hurt just now. Because they are picking speed now. Their camels are moving and they're moving with the speed. When they're going to be moving with the speed, they will not be able to balance themselves. And they will fall off. So that's the one explanation. But this explanation is not the preferred explanation. The second explanation, Anjasha Ruwaidaka Sawqaka bil Qawarir. Just hold on now. Hold on. You're driving this and these glass. In other words, woman. The women have been likened to glass. Why they have been likened to glass is because, like glass is fragile, then women are also fragile. They are delicate, right? They can become emotional, and they can break. The hearts can burst. You know? So they will not be able to contain themselves. They will not be able to keep themselves. So they aren't. You can't compare them like men. Men, they can take it. Any condition, they can take it. Don't you see? When you're talking to an audience of women, and in tutus you can make them cry. You can make them cry easily. You can make them cry. Before, in the old days, when people used to go for Hajj, you know. Now it was also, perhaps you get these type of situations. So there'll be one person that will be making dua. In those days it used to be the muallim. So the muallim will make the dua, and then he'll see now there's so many people there, women and all that. So now he'll word his duas like this. Oh Allah Ta'ala, there are women here. And they have left their masoom children at home, Allah Ta'ala. So he has to say that, so now it's inducing tears. What he's doing is inducing tears. So they know the number to play, the type of what beat to play, you know, how to play that and how to run that. They know about it. And they know how to induce the tear. So they'll cause that. Masoom children, Allah Ta'ala, they have left them, Allah Ta'ala. What must be happening to them, Allah Ta'ala? So it makes them cry, obviously. But in the meanwhile, what's their maqsad? Their maqsad is when they're going to cry and all that, they'll be affected. And then they will cash in. Obviously, afterwards, when they've cried and all that, and they felt, oh, our duas have got accepted now, because of our tears. See, what a great dua he made. So they will look deep into their pockets, and they will see the muallim right. You see. So what I'm getting at is, These are all arts. You see, how to induce tears, how to make people cry. All this is an art, and people know it. They perfect it. Now, men normally they don't get affected so quickly. They will listen to it, because generally men's minds, they work differently. Their minds are very active, running all around the show. And women are just, they, because they are collected, unke dimag mein yaksui zyada hota hai. See, they are more focused. They are living within the home, so their minds are not wandering so much. See. Their minds don't wander so much. So therefore, for them to get affected is very easy. One person wants to do some chanda work, collection work, you know, for a masjid or whatever else. So he has to speak to an audience of women. So now how easy it is to influence a woman. So he says to that audience of women, he says, you know, there are great, great opportunities that go around this world, you know. And man grab at those opportunities. You know, great, great opportunities. Masjids are built, you know. And hundreds and thousands of people will flock to the masjid to read the Jummah namaz, Fajr namaz, Eid namaz, all the namazes they will read. And who grab these opportunities? Men grab those opportunities. They get there and they grab the opportunities. And poor women, they're stuck in their homes. They don't know about it. So they get deprived of it. Now he's picking them up. He's picking up the emotions, you see. So now you can see now, as he's talking, they're crying, you know. Hey, we're getting left out. They all picking and grabbing all the opportunities, and we're getting left out. We're getting left out. We're getting left out. So that's the line he's talking. Then now he wants to pull the money out of the woman. So now he has to play a different line. He says, yes, hey, I just remembered now, you know. Just remembered now that there's one thing left in the masjid, and that's the carpeting of the masjid. Because the actual namaz doesn't take place on the roof. It doesn't take place on the walls. It doesn't take place on the mimbar or the mihrab. It doesn't take place in anywhere. Where it takes place on the musallas, on the carpets. The whole namaz takes place on the musallas. So, what a great situation it will be, you know, what a great opportunity it will be when the malaika will be taking the namazes. The malaika will be taking the malaz, the malaika will be taking the namazes and presenting it before Allah Ta'ala. And they will say to Allah Ta'ala, Allah Ta'ala, you know what? The namaz of the men and the musallas of the women. Hey, when you have to say that line, because he had the crowd. One is pulling out her earrings, one is pulling out her bangles, one is pulling out her watch, they will take it. See? Now this is all emotionalism, you see. And we don't realize emotionalism is something else, and deen is something else. And this sama and kawali and all this thing here, this is what happens. It just picks up the emotions. Sometimes some ulama kiram do it like we hear, some ulama did it, right? But now, that was an entry level. See, a person is an entry level, he's like on a life support. He's a life support, in his deen is like a life support. So in order to pick the person up, now you have to give him something just to pick him up. Child now, you know, just born, you can't put him onto solid straight away. And you put him onto solid, what's going to happen? He'll die. He'll bust his stomach. You give him briefly when he's born. What's going to happen? He's going to break his stomach just now. You can't do it. So you'll have to introduce him with small things, milk and maybe sugar water or honey water or something. Gradually the child will get strength. And then you introduce solace to the child. Now some ulama may have done it. They have done it, why? Just to introduce the person. But now when he's come up to his strength, then he can't say, no, I still need milk, sugar water, honey water. Now your strength is going to break. If you are going to suffice on that, then you're not going to get the desired amount of strength. You needed it, all right, at that time when he was on the life support. You were getting picked up. You were coming up. Now you got the strength, and you're beginning to realize, now you can't depend on that. Now actually you're going to go backwards, you're going to go in reverse. Now you need to move on. You need to move on. At the beginning, at the entry level, they had given you these things when you needed it. When your body needed it, when you required it. You didn't have any spiritualism, nothing you had in you. So they had to boost you up. And they boosted you up now. You don't depend on a booster. Booster is just a short while. Otherwise, if you depend on a booster, then that thing will bust the engine. It's just for the short period, all that thing is done down, you can't start it, you can't get it moving, so you require the booster and boosted strength. After that, then you can't depend on that. You can't say now lifelong boosting. You can't say that. So this was the one explanation that I explained. The second explanation, Ya Anjasha, Ruwaidaka Sawqaka Bil Qawarir. Anjasha, hold on, hold on. You are driving glass. In other words, you are driving woman. So when you are driving woman, you need to be very careful. You need to be very cautious. Why do you need to be very cautious? Because like glass can break very easily, then these women are listening to that hadith. You know what the singing that you are doing? They are listening to your singing. And your singing can break their hearts. And when their hearts are broken, then they can fall into fitna. They can fall into wrong. Because it's a group of women that you are driving. And they are listening to this. When they are listening to this, their hearts can get affected with this. They can get into fitna. Like I had explained this morning. Like, if you have a girl singing to you, all the time she's singing to you, can you get affected? Right? As a man, you will get affected. Your mind can run in all type of directions. So similarly, if a man sings to the woman, what's going to happen? Like you can get affected. Can you say that she's immune? Can you ever say that that woman is totally immune? They don't have any feelings. They're like farishtas. Like you have feelings, they have feelings also. You are a human being, they are a human being. You got sentiments and feelings and emotions, they also got the same. So like you can get affected, they can also get affected. So Rasul Samet cautions that Anjasha, Ruwaidaka Sawqaka bil Qawarir. Take this, just hold on now. See? So what we're getting at is sometimes we don't understand things in the deen, and we just see now this alim did it, so we can do it now. See? And that must be a good thing, you know, a good thing in deen, because he did it, so all of us can do it. But what I say is, you're going to get hooked onto this, then you will be left out with the solids and the things that will build up your body. Now you need to get onto solids. Now imagine a person gets hooked onto this, right? Now what's going to be the necessary result? What's going to result out of this? Now he is not going to be so committed to the recitation of the Quran Sharif. He won't be doing so much of zikr, right? He won't be doing so much of kitab reading and talim, besties ever, fazail, etc. He won't do this. And similarly, he won't be doing nafil namaz. He won't be doing Quran Sharif tilawat. All he'll do whole day, whenever he's thinking of some deeni thing, he puts on the nazam and listening to it. So that becomes his deen. Whereas, that was just a booster. Occasionally, you know, when you need a little bit of a boost, then you go into the quiet and listen to it and move on. But now, you're going to take it like a daily dosage. You're taking the morning, evening, night, all the time. Then will you have the type of attention towards the Quran, towards zikr, towards tilawat, towards dua, towards talim, what you need to do? So these are the solids. That was just the entry level. That was the beginning, just to induce something, just to move you on. Then the real things you have to take from. Now you have to take the real things. Quran Sharif is the real thing. Namaz is the real thing. Dua is the real thing. Talim is the real thing. You know, that these are the real things. This is now going to be the real energy of the body. And you're depriving the body of its real energy. So when you're going to get hooked on to this, then the more you'll get hooked on to this, you'll find anybody that is hooked on to these things here, then proportionately, his recitation of the Quran Sharif is going to get affected. Nafal namaz is going to get affected. Dua is going to get affected. Zikr is going to get affected. And talim, what he needs to do, that's like the life wire of the house, obviously that's going to get affected. All what he needed to do, that will go out of the house. And all that he needed to do now and then, occasionally he needed to do just as a booster, that will become the very system in the house. So you see, the dependence that we need on our ulama-i kiram. See, anything we are doing, we need to refer to them. We need to refer to them, ask what happened. What right here, is it permissible? Here, not permissible. This, I don't understand this. Can you explain this to me? So it must be a daily, continuous contact and a continuous association with ulama-i kiram so that we can see things in perspective. I'm sure before this explanation, most of us didn't know what is that position of that nazam. And why this person did it, why this person didn't do it, and if he did it, then why are you saying you shouldn't be doing it? But now, the mind's, alhamdulillah, with the grace of Allah, the mind is now clear that you will do it as a level, at a stage of desperation, when you need a booster, when you are doing, and you're doing, and you're doing, and you don't find the motivation. Time is passing, 1 week, 2 weeks, 2 weeks are passing. You don't have the motivation. There is no drive in you. And now you're getting into a state of depression, whatever. So you need something to boost you up, something to drive you. And then on such an occasion you had heard to some recital, then it's all right. 2-3 weeks and 4 weeks, provided it's done with all these conditions that I've explained and outlined by Hazrat Nizamuddin Awliya Sahab Rahmatullah Alayhi. Allah Ta'ala Tawfiq Naseeb Kareem.